You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
This is Tim McMaster taking you around the American League East for MLB.com Extras. The Baltimore Orioles setting records as far as power numbers in the month of June. So let's start there with our MLB.com Orioles reporter, Brittany Giroli.
Brittany, the Orioles are rolling again. Six straight wins after Tuesday's win. They've now opened up a nice lead in the division, 4.5 games ahead of the Red Sox, who are currently reeling a little bit. But I think the big surprise here as far as the Orioles go is back-to-back solid starts from Ubaldo Jimenez. Who saw that coming? Six innings, four hits, two earned runs last Wednesday. They get the win over the Padres. And then Tuesday night, he only lasts five innings, but he holds to just one earned run. Both starts, he had maybe more walks than you'd want. But either way, back-to-back wins, he's now 5-7. The numbers look good, but has Jimenez actually been pitching better in your eyes?
He's been okay. I mean, keep in mind, Tim, both of those starts were against the Padres. The last place he was struggling. So the reason why they slotted him up for those two starts was because he pitches well against San Diego. So I think if they were against maybe a divisional rival or a team with a winning record, you'd take them with a little bit more validity. But when you look at certainly the results and the finished product, he did what they wanted. He did what they expected. And that is keep this team in the game long enough for the offense to shine, which has really been the story of what the Orioles have been able to do all season. So I don't know if he's done enough to warrant staying in the rotation or a return by any means, but he has certainly started very slowly to turn things around and look better. Last night he had three walks, was able to minimize the damage. I don't know, you can make the argument, of course, if it's a team besides San Diego, do those innings unravel? I think that's really the big question here is how far has Ubaldo come versus did we just put him in the best possible situation to succeed?
Yeah, maybe at the minimum, at least he feels a little better about himself, whether or not he goes back to the bullpen or stays in the rotation. We will see. Then Kevin Gausman, speaking of guys who have certainly struggled at times this year, he gets seven scoreless frames on Saturday and finally gets that first win of the season. Was that a bit of a relief to Gausman to finally get in the win column?
I think so. I bet you say they don't matter as long as the team is able to come through with a win, but I think it matters a little bit to some of these guys. And I think when you have a streak like Gausman does to start the year, I mean, he wasn't good enough to win in all of those starts, but he has been good enough plenty of times before that last outing. So he did deserve to have that W by his name. So I think it was a nice thing to give him.
So the continued topic with the Orioles, though, is what do they add as far as pitchers go? Do they trade for a starter? What do they do here as we get closer to the trade deadline? Obviously, once we get on the other side of the All-Star game, things will really kind of heat up as far as that goes. But a couple names that I know have been thrown out, at least, in the rumor mill have been Francisco Liriano, Drew Pomerantz. Are those legitimate type names? Is that the type of pitcher the Orioles would like to add?
Yeah, probably a six-inning guy, a guy who can keep some innings. I kind of equated to a few years ago, Scott Feldman. I made that trade. I think they'd like to not trade a Jake Arrieta again in that deal, but they just need somebody who's going to keep them in the game, like Ubaldo last night. They don't need somebody who's going to light the world on fire. They don't have the prospects and pieces to be able to get that kind of a pitcher anyway. So I think you're looking at a smaller move, a rotation move, but that's really what the team needs.
Yeah, because the one thing we know this team can do is hit home runs and kind of a record-setting pace right now, Brittany, as far as the month of June. I think they're at 54 home runs right now for June, and the record is 55 by the Athletics back in 1996. I mean, this team was hitting home runs from opening day, but it seems like, if anything, they've actually added more power here in the last month or so.
Yeah, well, you knew when it started to heat up, the ball was going to be flying out. And I think the record's a combination of a lot of things. One, they've played a lot of games at home. That's about to change now. They're on a three-city road trip. And Camden Yards is a hitter-friendly park. It fits their lineup. It's starting to get humid at Baltimore. The ball's flying out. And then you look at this lineup. We all knew the power was there. So it doesn't surprise me they're closing in on the record. I'd be shocked if they don't at least tie that record they have today and tomorrow, I believe, right? Still in June.
Yep.
To do it. So, I mean, you're asking about one home run from a team that hits two or three almost nightly even if they don't hit any today, that means they're probably going to hit two or three that first game in Seattle just by the way that they've been going. So it's remarkable to watch. It really is.
Ian, the Red Sox struggles continue as far as the rotation goes, especially early in games. They're certainly not getting off to good starts, and things looked even worse on Monday night as they head to Tampa Bay to take on a Rays team that had actually lost 11 straight games. And then, bam, out of the chute, Eduardo Rodriguez struggles right from the first inning, giving up 5 runs. And I think the numbers now, over the last 15 games, the Red Sox have been outscored, I think, 22-0 in the first inning. And this Rays offense had really been struggling heading into the game. They were averaging under 3 runs a game over that losing streak. So after the game, Rodriguez optioned to AAA. How much of his struggles, we'll start with him as we get through this rotation and the struggles overall, but how much of Eduardo Rodriguez's struggles do you think still go back to that knee injury and lingering effects?
Yeah, Tim, I think the knee is healthy. The problem is that there were a lot of psychological hurdles for him to overcome while he was coming back from this injury. He was favoring the knee a lot. It was in the back of his mind. And then in that process, I think he lost some of his confidence. I think he lost some of his swagger. And I think he lost some of his mechanics. And he's really struggled with any pitch beyond his fastball since he came back. And it's been a bit painful to watch. And I was... I think they actually gave him one or two more starts than I thought they would, just because he had looked so lost since he came back. But it's just the problem is just not having many other options right now.
So he'll head down to Pawtucket, and with an off day, they get a little time before they have to decide who will step into that role of that starting spot. Clay Buchholz, clearly not the answer. His last two starts, he's given up runs in the first inning as well. I know there was probably hopes that, hey, you put him in the bullpen, try to get him fired up, try to get him focused. He comes back to the rotation, and it just looks like the same Clay Buchholz.
Yeah, well, the only exception I would make to that is that I think, aside from the first innings, he's actually been okay. It's just, he's just... Both those games, he kind of put the team in a deficit right away and then sort of settled down. So if he could find a way to pitch the same way in the first inning that he is from the second through fifth and maybe give you 6 innings instead of 5, I think you could actually have something to build on, or at least it's a passable starter you can throw to the mound every fifth day. But it's just been the whole thing's been a bit of a mess right now.
The first inning thing is always been fascinating to me because there's a lot of pitchers that struggle like that, and we're gonna go an odd direction here, Ian. But my mother is a big Red Sox fan, and she sees this, and I talk to her and I try to explain things, and she says, why don't they pitch a fake inning in the bullpen before they come into the game and get it out of their system? But it doesn't really work that way.
Yeah, maybe they could try that next time. I'll phone that one in to John Farrell.
Speaking of John Farrell, team meeting after Monday's loss. What I know, you never really hear what's said in those meetings, but what is he looking to get turned around by having a meeting?
Yeah, I just think that he said, "Look, guys, we're too good to be playing this bad, and we're too good to be losing this much, and it's on everyone, especially the pitching, to sort of set a tone for us." And, pitch with some conviction. And don't, if you make a bad pitch, don't let it affect the next pitch. And I think that's what Dustin Pedroia was telling Eduardo Rodriguez in the middle of the game on Monday night, where he's sort of yelling at him, like, look, you can't control what already happened, but get over it. bounce back from here. And I think that, I think that more than anything was what John was trying to establish to the team is, don't think about the last play. Think about the next one. And let's move on, and let's play like we can. So I think that more than anything else was what John Farrell was trying to get across after the game on Monday.
Yeah, you don't want this skid to spiral into something out of control. And you wonder where this team would be, Ian, without the amazing comeback that they had Friday night in Texas, because that was a game where if that goes the other way, then this streak is even worse. But what a comeback it was in the ninth with 2 outs to rally the way they did. but they waited till that point. And I think that's another thing is, yeah, the pitching's been bad, especially early in games, but the offense hasn't exactly been there early in games. This is an offense that early in the season was jumping out quickly on teams and getting ahead and kind of setting the tone that way, and that hasn't been the case. But Friday night was special in Texas, and it seemed like that's one of those games that we're going to think back on and kind of remember about this 2016 team, the way that team came back in that game.
Oh, for sure. I mean, it was a great win. I mean, you look at the fact that it was the first time in 13 years that the Red Sox had won a game when they were trailing by three with two outs in the ninth. So that's just one of those, the Sandy Leone 11-pitch at bat for the double. I mean, that was unbelievable. And that's another story, the Sandy Leone story. Suddenly this guy is a threat at the plate. You know, this guy was just known as an all-defensive catcher who couldn't hit. And lately he's been giving you good at-bats. He hit a two-run homer last night, so that's been a story to watch, too.
Brian, wow, what a tough game as far as Monday night goes, just for everyone, I guess, for the fans who mostly didn't stick around because of a three-and-a-half-hour rain delay, to the umpires who took a tongue-lashing to a degree from Joe Girardi after the game, and at the end of the day to the Yankees, who ended up losing a game that it seemed like they were on track to win. When you have a lead in the ninth inning and Aroldis Chapman's on the hill, you usually feel pretty good about that. But when it starts to rain, well, shouldn't even say starts to rain, when the rain becomes too much and he has to leave the game, goes the other way. The Yankees end up giving up four runs in the ninth after a 3.5-hour rain delay. They lose the game. I mean, should the rain delay have happened then? Should it have happened earlier in the game? Should they have tried to get it in? I don't know what the right answer is, Brian. What do you think?
I'm not sure what the right answer is either, but what I do know is that is a brutal loss for the Yankees. It's probably their worst of the year, I think, all things considered. You got to be feeling pretty good. You've got the AL's best team. You got a one-run lead in the ninth, and then it was obvious to me that Chapman couldn't throw strikes. He was just all over the place, and maybe that's kind of a mental thing that the rain starts getting in your head. Maybe he was slipping on the mound. Obviously, Joe Girardi said, there was an issue, that's why he came out. Maybe he thought they could even steal a win. Maybe you could win a game with only getting 24 outs, but they make you get to 27, and no matter how long it takes, and the Yankees have to wait a long time to have that crushing loss, and obviously Kirby Yates just didn't get the job done in any fashion or form. You can't hit three guys in the big leagues at that level, but really, it probably should have never got to that point. Obviously, the umpires wanted to get that game in to completion. I don't see what the harm would have been in having it be a suspended game, but that's obviously not the way to go. So the Yankees take a tough loss. And, I feel most badly for the fans who didn't get to see a complete game, because who's going to really stick around for 3.5 hours on a Monday night? And the stadium employees, a lot of whom took the Metro North, couldn't get home. A lot of guys are walking in the door at 7:30, 8 o'clock this morning. So that's just it's tough all around for everybody, but obviously the Yankees, it's tough for them too.
And Girardi goes out, like you said, he goes out to the mound and he has the discussion with the umpires. And I'm pretty sure he wasn't thinking, I'm going to get a rain delay out of this. I think he wanted something done to help Chapman with his footing on the mound. But it kind of backfires on him.
Yeah, for sure. And like I said, you know, anytime you're in that situation and you go into that delay, I think you start thinking, hey, maybe they're going to call this. And had they done it, the Yankees would have came away with a victory. But it wasn't meant to be, and it's not the way it worked out. So that is a really tough loss for the Yankees, and obviously a tough way to start off a four-game series against the Texas Rangers.
Yeah, very good Texas Rangers team that really you could say right now, considering how the Cubs have played in the last couple weeks, maybe right now the Rangers are the best team in baseball, which when I look at the roster and the pitching staff, I don't maybe get right now, but that's the way they're playing. How big is this series for the Yankees? Obviously, you drop game one, but this is a tough Rangers team. The Yankees can bounce back, win this series. That's got to be big for momentum.
Well, to me, it's a big test. I mean, it's a good opportunity for the Yankees to show what they really are. This is a team that we thought was going to fatten up against the Rockies. They lost 3 out of 4 to them, and were kind of lucky to get away with the one win that they did get. They did beat up on the Twins, taking 5 of 7. That's what they were supposed to do against them. So, but until this team starts making some forward progress and gets really over the 500 mark, I know they've kind of bubbled up a few times. They had a chance to get 2 games over, which They hadn't been since April and weren't able to do it in that final game against the Twins, and now you're down another game here. I'm not suggesting that the Yankees are going to win the next three from Texas, but if they do, it would be a pretty great statement for them.
The silver lining maybe from the game on Monday night, Mark Teixeira homers for the second straight game since coming back into the lineup. That's numbers 398 and 399. People maybe forget at this point that it was a race between him and Carlos Beltran at one point to get to 400. It didn't turn out to be much of a race with Teixeira hurt and Beltran having the great season that he is. But that first home run snapped a long stretch for Teixeira without a home run, obviously with the DL, but beyond that, how is he feeling right now since getting back, since being healthy? Obviously, the power is there.
Yeah, that race turned out to be more like me racing Toby Ellsbury across the outfield. And that's not what we kind of anticipated there. But Teixeira is encouraged. I think for him it was good to just show that he still can do it. Obviously, it was a career-long drought for him, and there's been a variety of health issues and reasons for that. And it's obviously not the year that he has been hoping for, anticipating, especially being an all-star last year. The Yankees were counting on this guy to be in the middle of their lineup, be that switch-hitting presence. He is a difference-maker when he's right. He clearly has not been right all year, and I just don't think that a player falls off that quickly. I know that he's had injury issues, and he is in the latter stage of his career, but I don't think Mark Teixeira is done by any means, and I'm to be honest with you, I'm shocked that when you look up at the numbers and see what he's done this year, because that is one area where I didn't think the Yankees were going to have a problem this year.
Bill, we record this podcast on Tuesday afternoon, and on Monday I was afraid we were going to be talking about a 12-game losing streak for the Rays, but they come through on Monday night. They get a win over the Red Sox, a much-needed win, and they get offense that had really been lacking, as this team in those 11 losses, I think it only scored 29 runs, but they get 13 against the Red Sox, including a big 5-run first inning against the Boston team that's really struggling. So a little good news here as we do the podcast, and Blake Snell gets his first career victory. He wasn't lights out by any means, but it's always nice to see a young pitcher with the upside of a guy like Snell get that first W.
Yeah, and, you know, he had a couple of moments last night where, of course, the Red Sox bats are always capable of putting up big numbers, and he had a couple of moments where he came through when he had to, even with the big lead. You know, things could have gotten out of hand, you know. You chip away a little bit here, a little bit there, and then, you know, a couple innings later, you're in trouble. So I thought he showed well last night and had some maybe some growth moments.
Obviously, when you're in a streak like 11 straight losses, things aren't going to be happy. The clubhouse isn't going to be a joyful place at all. But how did this team handle that losing streak from a day-to-day standpoint when you're in the clubhouse with the team? Have they been able to at least stay and keep kind of a level head through it all?
I think they really handled it pretty well. And, of course, I don't know if it helps or not, or makes you more frustrated, but I do think that there is the feeling that, you know, a lot of this might not have happened had they not had the injuries that they've incurred, and, you know, not as an excuse, but kind of like, you know, we're doing the best we can, you know, might be a little better if we were equipped with some of these other guys. And you know, I think one way to look at this team, too, is that it was going to be a struggle for this team to be competitive with what they had at the start of the year. So they really don't have the luxury of losing too many pieces. And once that happened, I think they really felt the brunt of that.
Yeah, when you talk about losing pieces, I mean, they've lost the pieces that were brought up to replace the original pieces at this point. I mean, you look at a list of Steve Pierce, Kevin Kiermaier, Brandon Guyer, Mikey Matuk, Steven Souza. I mean, it's caused them to actually go out and make a move. They make a move to get Oswaldo Arcia late last week from the Twins, and he's given the team a little bit of a lift. Sunday, he goes 3-for-4, hits a homer, drives in 3, and then Monday night, he goes 3-for-5, gets a double, scores a couple of runs. This is a guy who was having a tough season, but it's also a guy that in the past, not a great guy in the outfield, but in the past has shown the ability to hit at the major league level, and right now he's provided a little spark for the Rays.
Yeah, I know. I right away, one of the first things that caught my attention was his fielding percentage. 979 is not good for an outfielder.
Right.
But, you know, I think he was a little bit of a mystery there in Minnesota. You know, he had some good years there and then just kind of fell off the map. But apparently the Twins decided to give up on him, and then the Rays thought he might be a guy to help get him going. You know, there aren't a lot of times you're going to lose, you know, all of your outfielders at once like the Rays have, but, you know, he looks like he might be able to help them patch up this spell, and who knows, maybe he'll have one of those spots when everybody returns.
Yeah, the Twins were in a situation with Arcia, I think, too, when they have young outfielders coming up. I don't think they wanted to hold back any of those players as far as playing time goes for a guy like Arcia, and I think that led them to maybe give up on him a little quicker than you would think. The one thing the Rays have prided themselves, obviously, on is great defense, and he doesn't fit that. What are the chances? I mean, they didn't give up much, or they're not going to give up much to for acquiring Arcia. So if you end up having to kind of cut your losses on him once everybody comes back, not a big deal, I think. But what are the chances, you think, that he could stick with this team once you get some of those other guys back?
That's really hard to determine, yeah, because it really seems like the Rays have kind of loaded up on kind of plotting outfielder DH types this year. And, you know, I think when all the smoke clears, it's kind of hard to figure out, you know, among the ones you have, which one is going to be your DH. You know, they made the trade for Corey Dickerson. He's shown a lot of power and hit for an average. When the better fielding outfielders come back, you know, he's going to be your DH. So then what do you do with Arcia? It'll be interesting to see, but of course, a lot of times these things have a way of working themselves out with other injuries or moves.
Let's start with Monday night. Last week was a tough week for the Blue Jays. They've obviously been playing better baseball over the recent stretch, but a 2-4 week, and then the bullpen let it get away a little bit on Monday. And Drew Storen, who had been pitching well, really blew up. 4 earned runs in a third of an inning, and then Chavez didn't help him out. 2 earned runs in a third of an inning. So between those two guys, it slips away on Monday night. But overall, that's not really – I feel like that's one you can just kind of toss out, right? Is that fair to say? This bullpen's been pitching pretty well, and every team's going to have a rough night now and again.
Yeah, no, for sure. And Storen and Chavez have definitely had some positive outings to build on lately. You know, the series opener in Colorado certainly wasn't that. But I think one thing still is relatively clear about this team, and I think General Manager Ross Atkins would admit this, if the Blue Jays are serious about contending, and they certainly seem to be, they're going to need to do something to address the bullpen at some point. I think that's going to be the area going into the trade deadline that they're going to have to make a move because, you know, even though Storen and Chavez have looked good for the most part recently, they still had far too many kind of those one-game blow-ups this year where it's really kind of cost the team. And the Jays have, outside of Roberto Osuna, are still searching for a lot of answers. It seems like Brett Cecil is on his way back, should be here very shortly. That will help, but they're still going to need some other arms to add into that mix because, you know, it's been a tough season for Drew Storen. As much as he's had a few positive weeks to build off of, it's been a frustrating campaign for him, and that continued Monday night.
And the bullpen woes continue with Gavin Floyd heading to the disabled list. It's a shoulder issue. Here's a guy who obviously has had a lot of injury problems over the years. How serious is the shoulder issue? Do they think he can be back sooner rather than later? Or is this something that could keep Floyd out for a while?
This is something that could keep him out for a while, and that's something we're going to find out, you know, either Tuesday or Wednesday to find out the exact nature. They were, as of Monday night, they were still waiting for the results of his MRI. Obviously, they're going to take every precaution when it comes to Gavin Floyd just because of his extensive injury history that he has. But he was a nice little sit down there as well. I mean, he's another guy who had some ups and downs along the way, but for the most part, he was a reliable guy, especially not necessarily in that setup role, but more in that middle relief role. And that's going to be another hole that they have to fill if he's someone who's going to have to miss a significant period of time.
You mentioned Cecil coming back. How about Franklin Morales? He's in AAA also right now, right? They're both nearing the end of the rehab.
Yeah, exactly. And they were scheduled to pitch for Buffalo on Tuesday night. You know, and Brett Cecil will probably be the first of those two back, but I think they're basically in the same ballpark. And that's going to be a big addition. I know there's a lot of people frustrated with how Brett Cecil started this year. You know, he's infamously 0-5, but Brett Cecil, when he's going, is one of the better left-handed relievers in baseball. And this is a bullpen right now that doesn't have a single left-hander in it. So not only do they need Cecil, they also need Morales to come back strong, because those are two big pieces that they can potentially have down there, and that fills a couple of big holes. And then on top of that, you just add, hopefully from the team perspective, you add another right-hander to go into that mix down there at some point over the next month or so, and you piece it together that way.
Well, Monday night obviously went downhill late with the bullpen struggles. Beginning of the game, it was Troy Tulowitzki's return to Colorado. Obviously, Colorado's the team that drafted him way back in, I think, 2005. He was a cornerstone of that franchise. He signed a big contract to stay a part of that franchise, along with Carlos Gonzalez. So he goes back, and as expected, I think, by everyone, he gets a nice cheer from the crowd. They kind of pay a little tribute to him. What was that like, just seeing Tulo back where it kind of all started for him and being able to get appreciated by the Colorado Rockies fans?
It was definitely a cool moment, and I think it will probably help provide him with some closure as well. And it's probably something that he was really looking forward to. Well, I know it was something that he was really looking forward to coming back here. And I think the fact that enough time has passed now, almost a full calendar year since that deal, it's well documented. We all know that Tulowitzki wasn't happy with the trade at the time. Wasn't happy with the way Colorado informed him of the news, and I think he felt that there was a little bit of a betrayal there, and I think it took a lot of time for him to come to peace with that. But I think he has now. You could tell by some of his comments yesterday, and I think that's what made last night's moment even more special. And from a Toronto perspective, it was just kind of interesting to go back and see how much this fan base really loves him. I mean, it's a different appreciation for Tulowitzki in Toronto. Obviously, there's not that history there. But you could get a sense of just how beloved he was in this city when he went to the plate in the second inning last night. It was a cool moment to see. It kind of reminded me a little bit of Roy Halladay coming back to Toronto. Every franchise has that, the face of the franchise for a long period of time. And that would be Jose Bautista for the Blue Jays right now, probably. But for the last decade in Colorado, that was Troy Tulowitzki, and he got his moment last night.